Broadcasting worldwide on internet radio.
Refreshing takes on legal strategies.
Straightforward answers to difficult tax questions.
Independent ideas on building wealth. The Refresher Wealth Show with Mark Kohler and Matt Sorensen.
Previously recorded with Mark as the host of The Mark Kohler Show.
Enjoy this fresh take on strategies to better live the American dream.
Well, well, welcome everybody to today's show. My name is Mark Kohler, your host. Excited to be here with you. Another amazing show here, I promise you, on the Mark Kohler Show. I'm yours truly, Mark Kohler, talking about saving taxes, building wealth, protecting our assets, just living the dream. I'm an entrepreneur, CPA, attorney, author, living in Southern California with home office in Utah, another office in Phoenix, and one here in Irvine, California. Broadcasting live every Thursday at 11 a.m., trying to give all my listeners a voice of reason and common sense when it comes to starting a small business, maintaining it, making it work. And I hope all of you that are listening to this, please share the link. Of course, you can subscribe on iTunes and catch it after the show, but I love those live listeners. We appreciate those that can catch us live on your lunch break. Generally works for at least two or three time zones. A little early lunch on the West Coast, Mountain Time, boom, you're on at noon. And a little late lunch for those central folks. Of course, the East Coast and Hawaii, you know, it's maybe easier to grab it on your headphones while you're working away, returning some emails. But again, we're entrepreneurs. We got flexibility. We never said entrepreneurism was freedom. We just said it was flexibility. So hopefully you're finding some time to be with me today. Excited about today's show. We're going to be talking about 10 strategies for the solo entrepreneur. And I really love this topic. I'm excited about it. I'll explain in a little bit how I came to want to hold this show. It kind of caught me off guard. I didn't plan on having this show with this particular title, but I'll explain why here in a little bit. So excited to share that insight with you. Would like to give a few little thoughts or tips or comments here. Many of you get the newsletter every week at the blog. Matt Sorensen, my partner in the law firm, did a fantastic blog, posted a blog article here last night. So that went out on the newsletter, and it's about registering your company in states where you have rental properties or doing business, and it's called Foreign Registration. How, what, where, when, and how. It's a great little article. For those of you that have business going on in multiple states, you're going to want to read that blog article. You can catch it there on the newsletter or at mattnsorensen.com. So check that out with one T, M-A-T. So, let's see. I just talked about small business ownership myself, a couple tax deadlines. Let me mention an important tax deadline here. May 15th. Many of you think the tax season's over. Oh boy, folks, man, we're still in the throes of tax season. This is it. About 60% or more of our clients extend, gives them a chance to do their books, do a little planning. So we're still hitting it hard. I've got an incredible team back in Utah at the home office working on tax returns daily. But a tax deadline, May 15th, some of you may not know about. So this is the May 15th tax deadline for IRAs. Now, this is not 401k rule. This is just simply IRAs. And basically, if you have UBIT, unrelated business income tax, or UDFI, unrelated debt financed income, you might have to file a tax return. Now, some of you may say, Mark, what are you talking about? An IRA has to pay tax? Well, I thought today for my little tip, I wanted to share this point because this is a big one. When you have an IRA and your IRA is out doing business, quote unquote, not investing, but doing business. So your IRA opens up a restaurant or a spaghetti factory or is doing some consulting or services by hiring staff, whatever the case is. If the IRA is doing business, the IRS says, Congress says, not fair if you don't pay some tax. So the IRA has to pay some tax. It's called UBIT tax. And we want to keep our clients out of UBIT. So we generally encourage our clients not to run operational businesses inside their IRA, but do more investing and fixing and flipping properties. Keep those to a minimum under 3, and you won't have a problem with UBIT. But be careful. If you think you do, tax returns are due by May 15th, or you can get a 3-month extension. So get a consult with me or someone on the accounting team, probably either Liddell Ayer, Brian Brown, or Dustin Johnson, or myself on the accounting side, to understand the process for that 990T tax return. It's called 990T as in Tom. It's 990T. Now also, if you have debt, it's called unrelated debt finance income. So if your IRA is leveraged and you borrowed money inside your IRA, don't forget you might have UDFI. So I know this. Some of you are thinking, oh my gosh, this is the first time I listened to this show. This has got to be boring stuff. No, this is good. We love self-directing our IRA. Love borrowing money and inside our IRA, even if our credit is bad or we can't set any more rentals on our credit, whatever the case may be, our IRA can borrow money, but it might have to pay some tax on the proportion of income related to the proportion of financing on your property. There's an equation. So if you made money inside your IRA from the sale of a property and there was debt involved, you might have UDFI. So give us a holler. Let's analyze it. Let's deal with it. So that deadline is May 15th. And if you need to file an extension, file an extension. Just give us a buzz. We'll file an extension. And think about that. For those just joining us, I know a lot of people kind of roll in here in the first 5 minutes of the show. I'm talking about the deadline May 15th for IRAs that may need to file a tax return for UBIT or UDFI. For those that are self-directing their IRAs, you know what I'm talking about. Because you know you get a consult on that and a memo from us when you set up an IRA LLC with us. But just keep it in mind, May 15th is your deadline. Get an extension filed. If you need to, talk to Marisha in the office at K&E CPAs. We'd love to have you there. Now, as you know, here on the show, we have a regular tipster session here at the very beginning. I was just in Salt Lake last Saturday at a Renatus conference, and several people came up and said, Mark, I really like the format of the show and the experts that come on at the beginning of the show and share kind of their practical tips for the week. And I was glad to hear that. So I want to make sure that all of you realize that there are listeners out there encouraging and advocating for this. So if you don't like it, let me know. But I'm hearing good things. So with that, and without any further ado, I'll bring out Lee Chen. He's an attorney out of our California office. He was just on the show a couple weeks ago as an expert. We needed him on a special topic. So we brought him back here again for poor guys in the rotation quite a bit. But, you know, it's okay. Lee, welcome to the show. I caught him off guard. I can hear him getting off the speakerphone. So,
hello, Mark. I pushed the wrong button there.
No problem. Well, Lee Chen, based out of Irvine, California. What have you bounced into this week with working with clients? You got a little story or example, a little tip for us that you could share that we could all learn from?
Just a little tip. There's a frequent misconception that I come across pretty frequently with when people are buying and selling real estate, and that's regarding the as-is disclaimer. I get a lot of people who think that the as-is means something that it doesn't. And so I thought it'd be good to kind of clarify what that really means.
I like it. And this is good. For those that don't know this, Lee has been to court hundreds of times. He's been a litigator for, gosh, close to 10 years. So he really knows his way around a courtroom. I just watched Law and Order. But he really knows his stuff here. And so I know you've litigated this topic. So me as a real estate investor, I'm kind of interested to hear what you say too, Lee. This is good. I like it. Okay, so as is. So are we talking from the buyer side or the seller side? Which side are we talking about first?
Well, we'll talk about both sides really quickly, but this really comes up in the purchase and sale when there's an issue with the condition of the property or there's a disclosure issue. You know, a seller will typically say, well, hey, it says as is. That means I don't have to do anything. That means I'm released from any liability, and that's not what it means.
Ooh, okay.
What it really means is, as is really means, with all faults, meaning, you know, whether it's a car or whether it's a house, that you're taking the property in whatever condition that you that's visible and that's observable, and that's what you're taking, and that, you know, I'm not going to fix anything. You're just taking it as is. That's what it means. What it doesn't mean is that I can hide anything, you know, I can hide defects about the property, or that I don't have to tell you important things about the property that I know about. It does not mean that. So when you are a seller and you're using an as is, you have to remember that doesn't take away your disclosure obligations. Okay, so if you know, for example, that there was that there was a huge plumbing leak and it was there for months, and then there was mold on the walls, and that you painted over the walls, you can't just say, "Well, it's as is. I don't have to tell you."
Okay. Now, let's talk about that disclosure obligation. So, if I'm a seller and I want to sell a place as is, I just want to say, "Hey, you take it as is. Great." You still said I have to disclose things. Is this where materiality comes in, like disclose material things, the things that aren't a big deal, like, oh, the outlet in the bathroom is broken. I don't need to disclose that. They can see that. What would be the line drawn between material and non-material?
Right, and that's a really a question of state law. So the states may vary, you know, very little bit, but generally it's whatever's material, meaning whatever affects the value or the desirability of the property, and that is known to you, or something that is that you can find out, that's obvious. So if it's something that's very minute, or if it's something that, you know, you as a homeowner, you know, you couldn't know about, like, you know, something that require an expert to find out, or requires an intrusive search, you wouldn't need to disclose that unless you have actual knowledge about it.
Okay, so let me ask the flip side now. So if I'm a buyer, this is really good. I like this. So if I'm a buyer and I go into a project and someone says I'm selling it as is, does that really change me as a buyer and the approach I'm going to take? Should I, like, put up my antennas and ask for more disclosures or be more aggressive in some way?
Well, as a practical matter, all these contracts have as is. you know, that at least in California, the standard contract has the as is provision, so you're not going to get around that. But when you do see that, like if you have a regular contract, you do see that, you may want to raise your antennas a little bit, because maybe the seller is kind of telling you that there may be something wrong with the property. It's not perfect. When there's an as is, what the seller is pretty much saying is, I'm not making any warranties about the property. Okay, I'm not making any representations that it's this, that, or the other. It's up to you to figure out whether this is a purchase that's right for you. And so, in that respect, the buyer does need to be a little proactive in trying to determine whether there are any defects that would affect his decision to buy.
Okay. Wow. Deep. Very deep. Okay. So this is good. So as is. Excellent. Excellent. Well, I'm seeing. Yeah. I'm looking at the chat window here. I'm looking at my emails to see if anyone has any questions on that from our listening audience. I don't see anything. Lee, I'm going to let you go here, I guess. But just a word to the warning, I guess. A word of warning is always, as a buyer, require the disclosure, do your inspection, and as a seller, I would presume, make sure you don't hide anything that's material or that would be obviously important for a seller, a buyer, that would they would want to know. Is that a good summary? Am I fair to say?
Absolutely.
That?
Absolutely. That's exactly the point of the as-is. Is the as-is is not going to – it's not a release of liability. It's just you're taking whatever you see. Take it as you see it.
Okay. I like it. As is. Very interesting. I think most of us would presume that as is allows us as a seller to just walk away or just not be as engaged in the sale and say, good luck, buyer, figure it out on your own. But that is not what it's saying. And I think this is an important message for everybody to hear. So good stuff. Well, Lee Chen, there in our Irvine office, thank you for that tip.
You're very welcome. Always glad to help.
I love it. Thanks, Lee. And Lee, of course, if you want to get a hold of him, it's Lee at kkoslawyers.com. That's L-E-E at kkoslawyers.com. So if you need to get him, get a hold of him, he'd be a great resource for you if you got to write a nasty letter somewhere. Now, before we get to our topic, and our topic's a big one, and so I want to get to it as soon as possible, but I want to bring up one other topic that I've been getting a lot of phone calls on. I just had a phone call this morning that was directly related to this. I've been reading some articles this morning on it too, and that is our healthcare situation. The Obamacare rollout is still got a lot of traction still. It's got a lot of things to do. So come 2014 is another big rollout of issues related to healthcare. So I just want to plant the seed for all of you out there. Please hear me out. Hear this important announcement. Most of the states of this country are predicting an increase in health insurance premiums across the board. We've all kind of heard that. We don't want to hear that. We also know that tax rates went up this year. For anybody making more than $250,000 a year, you're single, $300,000 married, you're going to start paying more to help pay for Obamacare or the Affordable Care Act. And there's a lot of things coming down the pipe. Now, there's some good things here. I've said it before. Obamacare has some good things in it that we really needed to force the insurance companies to do, but it also comes with a cost, and it's hard. Many out there cringe when I say that. They're like, Mark, how could you say that? Let the free market take care of healthcare for our citizens. We're the United States of America. This is not a regulated product. We should let people deal with it on the free market. However, we have 40 million Americans without insurance because the free market wouldn't help them. And we had many, many people with pre-existing condition problems trying to keep family members on health care, and the list goes on and on. So the Affordable Care Act is just a huge issue that all of us cannot just forget about. There's another big rollout January 1st, 2014. So I just want to plant the seed that I will be holding a show within the next month, 2 months at the least, and we're going to be talking about what to expect with healthcare this year. So this is very, very important. Please keep it on the back of your mind. I'll have several experts on a panel, and we'll cover it at that point. So we'll see how it goes. Now, moving on to our topic of the hour. This is a big topic, so we've got to. I want to get into it as quickly as possible. And I was kind of caught off guard with this topic. I didn't expect to get into this in this particular way, but I was grateful to hear from a client of mine that his name is Jerem Adair. I want to bring him out here on the show. He is the owner, founder of Solopreneur. If you didn't think entrepreneur was hard enough to spell or pronounce, Solopreneur Marketing. And he's reached out to me over the last while and said, Mark, you know, a lot of times when you're talking, us solo entrepreneurs think you're talking above our heads. You know, you might want to focus a little bit more on the solo entrepreneur, the one man, one woman show. And I had often felt that I was, but as I've talked to others, I've discovered that that is not truly the case. So that they don't feel that I'm reaching out to them with this topic as best I could. So I'm excited now to talk about this topic of solo entrepreneurs and 10 strategies. And I need to ask of you, I want to beg of you, for those that are listening live, and I can see you there on the studio panel, I want to always give a shout-out to Lisa Owens running the studio, that I would love any feedback from any of you out there that are one-man, one-woman show entrepreneurs, solo entrepreneurs or solopreneurs. I'd love to hear from you today. Give me a little feedback. Give us a call. Give us an email. Make a comment on the chat window. I would love to hear from you as we go through these 10 strategies and things that you might want to share or story or experience. Disagree, agree, or add anything to the show. We would appreciate that. If you'd like to call in, if you haven't already, you can call in at 646-200-4285. 646-200-4285. Sometimes I get lots of comments, sometimes I get none at all. But I want all of you that are listening via the podcast on iTunes or the recorded version on Blog Talk Radio, please don't feel like you're the only one listening to the show. I've got a whole bank of people listening. I'm just hoping I'm encouraging them to reach out and say something here and help us out. But let me bring Jerem out on the show. I'm excited to have him here with us. The founder and operator of Solopreneur Marketing, website marketing company. He does an amazing job. Jerem, welcome to the show.
Hey, thanks, Mark. Can you hear me?
I can hear you. You sound a little muffled. I don't know if you're on a headset or whatever, but just speak up, and we're glad to have you here. Thanks so much.
Yeah, oh, great to be on here.
So I wanted to ask you, Jerem, you kind of coined this phrase, solopreneur. Tell us where you came up with that, where you've heard about it, and what it means to you.
Okay. It's not something that I coined, actually. I didn't make up the word, but I've heard it here and there, but it's not really very common yet. It's only slowly making its way into people's vocabulary, but this time there really isn't a better way to describe somebody who runs a business completely on their own. You know, there isn't a word that everybody recognizes. So, you know, there's, like you said, there's phrases like solo business owner or, you know, sole proprietor. They kind of give us an idea that somebody's running a business by themselves. But this is kind of weird because there are, as you said on your site, there are millions of us solo entrepreneurs who are out there running a business out of, you know, out of our garages or spare bedrooms or small offices. And we're either full-time or, you know, we're trying to do it on the side while we quit our jobs. But there are millions of us. And that's why it's strange that there really isn't a word for us that's more common than solopreneur. It doesn't even show up in dictionary.com, actually.
Yeah, I would think that this is why I was kind of thrown off with this, and this is why I'm doing today's show, is that in my mind, I always thought of an entrepreneur as typically a one-man, one-woman show business. But that's not the case. I mean, many, quote-unquote, entrepreneurs have lots of employees and businesses that have been around for a long, long time and are very well established, and they would certainly call themselves an entrepreneur. But there's millions, like Jerem, I love what you said, millions of Americans out there that are just kind of working out of their home, doing some smaller version of what these big-time entrepreneurs are doing, and they sometimes feel like they're on an island. Just quickly here, I know you're not going to be with us for the whole show here, but I mean, what are some of the issues that built your followers and your blog on this topic? What are some of the issues that you've seen these solo entrepreneurs face?
It's like you said, it's kind of the reason we're talking here today is that solopreneurs aren't typically recognized as having unique needs. So we're kind of lumped in with small businesses, which, you know, technically we are, but a business with 20 employees and a couple million in revenue is still considered a small business, and yet their approach to business is wildly different from ours. And so, like in the marketing world where I live, the strategies that you follow are very different if you're a solopreneur than if you're a business with employees and, you know, a decent marketing budget. So I listen to people talk about small business marketing strategies or small business tax and legal strategies, or really any other business topic. And you hear them talking about fancy things that take a lot of time and money and effort. And I'm thinking to myself, you know, I don't have a ton of money to put into this, and I don't have a lot of time to figure this all out. I'm just a single person trying to run a business. And I start to question if these people that I'm listening to really understand the situation that I'm in. And so that's why I'm so excited to be listening to you today, Mark, to learn strategies that I know that you've put together specifically with the solo business owner in mind.
Well, thank you. I appreciate that, Jeremy. Without further ado, I'm gonna probably jump into those 10, and I know that you're gonna be, I know that you're gonna be listening in here, and you may want to quote unquote raise your hand and make a comment. I welcome any of you listeners to do that. But I wanted to give a shout out to you, Jeremy, and thank you for bringing this issue to my attention. And I want to mention this to everybody out there. I was in Salt Lake on Saturday, and my radio show came up. And I told several people out in the foyer of this convention, I said, hey, if you come up with a topic for a radio show that you think would be impactful for you or your followers or friends or family or business owners in your community, let me know. I'd like to build a radio show around that topic. And several people said they'd let me know. And Jeremy, in the last little while, has given me this topic and been passionate about it. So, Jeremy, thanks so much for coming on the show. Now, folks, I want you to know, we're going to have Jeremy back. He is a solopreneur marketing expert. That's what he does. He helps people that are one-man shows better design their marketing plan. So, Jeremy, we hope to have you back soon and talk about marketing for the small business owner in the very near future.
Looking forward to it.
All right. Well, thanks, Jeremy. All right. Well, I'm just going to let you stay on the line here and continue to listen into the show, and we appreciate you being here. So thanks, Jeremy. All right. Well, folks, I'm going to dive into these top 10 strategies. So if you've got a pen and paper handy, if you're driving down the road, just kind of note self, you know, maybe keep this handy as a show that you may want to come back and listen to. But let me go through these 10 points. And, in fact, I'm going to even kick it off with a question that just came in over the chat line. And I wanted to I have no problem. I love to give priority to questions and comments as I work through these 10 topics. So I'm going to do this one first. I want to keep on track. So the first question was, Mark, what are your thoughts on buying real estate notes as a solopreneur? I'm having the hardest time saying that, solopreneur. what are your thoughts on buying real estate notes as a solopreneur? It seems like this may be a good way to minimize risk. What are your thoughts? Well, I think that notes are much less risk for any investor. I don't care if you're a one-man, one-woman show or a corporate executive or a small business owner with a large team or employees. Notes, as we've talked about it on the show, in fact, recently, we had Bruce Norris on the show last month, who specializes in notes. It was a fantastic show. I got a lot of good feedback on that. And he feels that notes should be a part of every person's investment portfolio. They pay interest. They're low risk. There's no need for an entity, an LLC, or a corporation. And they're a fixed rate of return. They pay every month. And if you do it right, your risk is very minimal. Now, you're not going to see huge gains. If you might see double-digit gains through points or a unique strategy with hard money even. But generally, notes are not going to give you a large return, but you are certainly correct that they minimize risk. Now, I'm going to just be blunt and say this. I don't think notes and the many, many clients that I consult with are a unique strategy to solopreneurs. I don't think that the solopreneur should concentrate them more on anyone else. I think all of us should be looking to notes as part of our portfolio. Now, again, this is for people that are building more and more wealth, and you bought your rental property every year, you've got your healthcare strategy, you've got your income stable, and you're building some wealth, you're funding your IRA or 401k. After all that, start looking at notes. I mean, I want you to do the basics first. And even Bruce Norris talked about that. I mean, you've got to take care of the basics. And then with your surplus, with your additional sources of income, that's when note investing can be fantastic. And then there was a quick follow-up to the above question. A friend has a contact that purchases thousands of properties that are in default. He is offering to sell them at a fraction of the unpaid balance. All are in first position, so liens will be, et cetera, et cetera. That's great. I have several clients that buy huge portfolios of notes, and then they have a process of going in and collecting and potentially foreclosing on property. And this is a big business. I would say that's a little bit more aggressive than just buying a note on the side. That's a full-time business for many of my clients. When they buy that many notes that are in default, you just signed up for a big project. And that's okay. That could be your business. But I think that's a little bit more than just buying a note as a solopreneur and doing a first trust deed note. And I think, again, I would recommend all of you to listen to the Bruce Norris radio show regarding notes about 4 or 5 weeks ago, if that. It was very recent. Okay, so the first, I've got these 10 strategies. I'm going to throw these down, and I think you guys are going to love these. And with every strategy, I have a reason for the strategy, kind of what a concern or a problem with being a solopreneur or solo entrepreneur, what concern you might be facing, what would be the resolution. And, of course, I've got a tax and legal tip here, you might be surprised at these 10. So, number one, this is the number one. Guys, when I sat down to say what's the number one recommendation I would give to a solopreneur, is number one, build a board of advisors. Now, any of you that have read my book or been on my webinar series that I do every month or watch my video on CFO in a Box as your personal CFO, I talk about having a board of advisors a lot. I think this is an important topic. Now, of course, this is for everybody, but specifically for solopreneurs, let me explain this, what this means. You don't need a corporation. You don't need an LLC. Now, if you have one, great, but you basically just need to find 4 to 5 friends, and you're going to create a board of advisors, and you're going to take them out to dinner or have a barbecue once a month, and you're going to make it religious, and you're going to tell them, I would like you to serve on my board of advisors, and you get an awesome dinner once a month, and I'd love to have you over to the house or go out to this nice dinner, and I'm going to put on a thick skin. This is important. You're going to put on thick skin, and you're going to talk about your business. Where is it headed? And folks, I don't care if you're just starting a little MLM in the basement of your house making $100 a month. I don't care if it's an invention that could make you millions. Whatever it is, get a board of advisors. Folks, here's why. When you're an entrepreneur, you feel like you're alone. You feel like you're all alone. It's a very common feeling. You feel isolated. You don't have anyone to bounce ideas off of. You're nervous to make decisions. Get a board of advisors of 5 people and have a good spread, young, old, male, female, business owner, corporate exec, day jobber, blue collar, white collar, I don't know. Get a good, diverse group. Don't get 5 people that think all the same. Get these 5 people together and say, I'd like to have you be a coach of mine. I'll buy you a nice dinner. Please do this for me. Be on my board of advisors. And every month you go through what your goals are, what you're accomplishing. And you know what's cool here? It holds you accountable. I mean, how many of you are going to have this board of advisors and then a month later want to look them in the eye and say, oh, yeah, I didn't make any progress? You're not going to want to do that. It's going to make you make progress. It's going to force you to make progress. And it's going to give you a feeling of a group to some degree of people looking out to help you. And many, many people love to give free advice, especially for a nice dinner or barbecue, and especially if there's someone that loves you, tell them to give you tough love and tough answers. So that's number one. I want all of you out there that are solopreneurs to build a board of advisors. Number two, I'd like all of you to start a strategic plan. Now, this starts because it is very hard for us as entrepreneurs to hold ourselves to timelines. It's difficult to get things done because we're not clocking anywhere. We don't have a supervisor. We don't have a manager breathing down our necks. We're on our own. And so we have to set up a timeline of things that need to be done and hold ourselves accountable with a strategic plan. Now, again, this is an appendix in my book. It's a video on my CFO videos. I talk about it on the webinar. I'm a broken record on this, folks, if you follow me at all. So let me tell you where this starts. You go down to Staples today or Office Depot, and as you're right there at the checkout stand, you're going to see those cute little 4-inch by 3-inch journals, those little leather journals. And, of course, for the ladies, they have all these designs and colors. For the guys, maybe just a plain old black leather one looks manly. Get it. Put it in your bag. Put it in your car. Put it by your nightstand at night. And when you have ideas, you write them down in there. You put together a week's plan, a month plan, and a six-month plan. And you constantly carry that little strategic plan around with you. And you make goals and objectives and timelines, and you follow it. Because if you don't write it down and make those goals as a solopreneur, you're going to get behind. You're going to not accomplish what you want to accomplish. So that's number two. Have a strategic plan and carry it around with you everywhere you go. Now, folks, I'm going to throw this out again. I'm going to look at the chat line. I love it. If you'd like to make a comment, if you'd like to make a call in and ask a question, I will also check my email here and see if there's any comments on the emails. Nope, and I've got here one with the email. Sanan is asking a question about Matt Sorensen's blog article. Since it's kind of off of this list, Sanan, I will come to this at the end of the show. I'm going to try to find time for this question. Since it's off of the topic of these 10 points, I'll do my best to get to that before the end of the show. Okay, number three. Again, folks, shoot me an email, comment, question on these 10 topics. Number three, cash flow. This is huge. Guys, one of the biggest challenges I know solopreneurs face are the challenges with the ups and downs of cash flow. Now, this is where I joke about with my wife. I've got another point here that's going to bring up marriage and relationships. But on the cash flow topic, and I've said it before, and she laughs about it, I took her deposition before the show. I couldn't have her on the show live because it could just get it'd be like a therapy session, and it could get crazy. So I don't want to do that. But I took her deposition under oath and said, "Tell me what it's like being married to an entrepreneur." Now, after all the tears and crying and yelling and screaming, it's tough. Being an entrepreneur is an up and down process. There's months where you're making tons of money, and there's months where you're living on credit cards. And I don't care how successful your business is or how small your business is. This is a common problem. So here's what I want to suggest to you. Have a cash flow plan. Now, for some of you, if you're just starting a small little business on the side, you're going to create balance in your cash flow by keeping your day job. And I want to encourage all of you to do that. If you've got a day job and you're just getting started as a solopreneur, don't quit the day job. I'm always shocked with people coming to me. I'm going, "Oh, Mark, I'm so excited. I quit my job. I'm going to be an entrepreneur." Whoa, slow down. Be an entrepreneur with a day job first until it gets too expensive to go to your day job. Then you make the leap to an entrepreneur. Be careful about the cash flow issue. I recommend everyone try to have 2 to 3 months of cash flow cushion in your bank. That's a good rule for anybody. But for those that have, a consistent job and paycheck, you might have a little more security where you can get away with not having that cushion. But certainly for an entrepreneur, you've got to have a little bit of a cushion, whether it's in a credit card, a line of credit, or just cash in the bank, because there will be ups and downs. When you have a bit, here's my final point. As an entrepreneur, when you have a big month and make a ton of money, don't go spend it all. Keep a cushion. Keep a cushion and set aside something for taxes. You've got to have a long-term perspective when it comes to cash flow. This is a huge issue for solopreneurs. Okay, number four, marriage and relationships. Now, this kind of relates to number three, because in your relationships, your spouse, your girlfriend, your boyfriend, your brothers, your sisters, your parents, whoever you associate with, they may not like the ups and downs of entrepreneurship. They may have not grown up with that. I joke with my wife because she grew up in a household with two professors, college professors, where they had a very steady income. And then she married me, and it was like, buckle up, woo! You know, roller coaster, all crazy. Now, some of you entrepreneurs grew up like that with parents that were entrepreneurs, and you're okay with that. That insecurity, that feel is not, that's not threatening to you. But for many people, that is very threatening. And so what I want to encourage you, and this is very, very common with solopreneurs, is they become an entrepreneur and it stresses relationships. And so I want to encourage you right off the bat, communicate. Talk with your loved ones. Talk with the important people in your life and tell them why you're doing this. Tell them why you're passionate. Explain your plan. Make them a part of your board of advisors. If you want to go out and prove yourself and not communicate with your loved ones as to what your game plan is, when you have ups and downs, they're going to be very critical. They're not going to be as supportive, and you're going to be shocked. You're going to be like, why aren't you supporting me? I'm trying to live my dream. I'm so excited about this small business. But folks, they're not going to get it. They're not going to get it. They're going to be like, what are you talking about? Your income's up and down. You're working nights. You're doing all this. But you want to tell them why. Because folks, if you're like me, you're passionate about it. Sometimes you can't sleep at night because you have so many ideas going through your head of what you want to do with your small business. You're so passionate because you know that you have flexibility to do what you want when you want. And you know there's going to be ups and downs with your income, and there's going to be ups and downs with your schedule, but the people around you may not know that. So you've got to communicate. Share your passion and why so that they can be supportive to you when you have your ups and downs. Because folks, I'll tell you right now, as a solopreneur, you're going to have your ups and downs. So prepare yourself for that. Prepare your family and friends around you so that they can be supportive when that happens. Okay, number five. Establish an exit strategy. And with this, I want to bring up the word patient. Okay, now here's why I bring this up. Solopreneurs, you feel like you're on an island, right? You're on your own. You're out there trying to make it happen. You're working late nights, after work, in the evenings, on the weekends. You're trying to build your small business. And sometimes you get too close to the situation, don't you? You get close. You're like me. You get close to this project, and you're like, man, it's so close. We're going to make so much money, or it's going to just bust out, and it's going to happen. And you're close, but you're too close sometimes. And when you step back, you're like, oh, I should have not stayed with this business long enough, or as long as I did. And it destroyed me and my income and my life. This is why this board of advisors, my first tip, helps, because it gives you perspective. When you have to explain your business to a group of people once a month or every 2 months, whatever it is, sometimes when the words are coming out of your mouth, you're like, and we did this, and oh, my business really does suck. You know, you have to explain it, and all of a sudden you feel the pressure of, oh, wow. When I step back as a third party and look at my business critically, it may not be what I thought it was. Now, the converse is many people with a small business sometimes give up too soon. They're not patient. They have expectations of, oh, I got to make money with this, or you know, this whole idea was terrible. Folks, I just had a phone call with someone today. They said, you know, I haven't made money with this, and I'm not happy about it, or, you know, yada yada. You know what? You know, what, man, when I went to college, I went to college 11 years before I made any money as an attorney CPA. Now, that's a typical collegiate-type academic path. But folks, you can't go to a weekend seminar and start your business and then 6 months later be shocked if you haven't made money. A year, 2 years. Sometimes it takes a long time. And the learning curve can be long. So here's my point. Define an exit strategy and expansion plans based on criteria. If I make so many in sales, I'm going to blow it up. If I don't make enough in sales at this point, I'm going to shut it down. Have objective criteria. Do not get emotionally involved. And I know it's hard to say that because, man, I'm an emotional guy. And when you've got a small business, you get emotional. So it's tough. But this is why I want you to set up an exit strategy based on objective criteria or an expansion strategy based on objective criteria. That will help you as a solopreneur when you feel like you're all alone. You can pull that out of the drawer and go, okay, I promised myself if I didn't have X number in sales or X number of clients or X number of products on the shelf or whatever it is, that obviously my business wasn't going to move forward. Or I promised myself that when I reached these goals, I was going to go get an SBA loan or look for partners or, and we're going to come to that. So, in fact, I want to say that now. You know, that's where the expansion comes in, where there's options of that sort of deal. Okay, number six, I want to talk about tax and legal for a minute. Of course, many of you know that I wouldn't be doing my job if I didn't talk a little bit about tax and legal. And so here's some solopreneur tips when it comes to tax and legal. Number one, starting out as a sole proprietorship is fine. Please do not get sucked into the scams. And this is probably the biggest concern for a solopreneur, is they feel like they need to go out and start their asset protection or their entity too early, and they get sucked into scams, setting up the entity in the wrong state, getting too elaborate too quickly. So for you that are a one-man, one-woman show, you're just getting started, open up a bank account as a sole proprietor and just start trying to make some money. Build your strategic plan. Have your meetings with your board of advisors. Get out there and test your idea. But don't feel like you've got to incorporate right away. Now, I'll tell you, the next step for a solopreneur is going to be an S corporation. It's almost 9 times out of 10. Incorporating as an S corporation is going to be the next logical step from a legal standpoint. Start out as an entrepreneur, sole proprietor, and then graduate to the S corp. We can have a consultation on when you do that, how you do it, how you maintain the S-Corp, and why it makes sense, because it will save you taxes, my friends. But you always don't have to jump out and get the corporation going first. Now, there's sometimes good reasons to set up corporations right out of the gate. You might have a liability issue. You've got a very high-risk business concept. You want to establish corporate credit. You want to bring in partners right away. You want to get your image out there as a corporation. You're establishing a URL, a GoDaddy website. You're doing all these things where you're like, Mark, I don't want to wait till later to set up an entity. I want to do it now. Okay, that's cool. That's good. But don't feel like you have to. A lot of times, too many people get too legal too fast. Now, that brings me to my next point on the quote-unquote tax and legal, and that is have a healthy respect for bookkeeping. Folks, I cannot say this enough. Entrepreneurs and solopreneurs start doing things out of their personal checkbook. They don't get engaged with QuickBooks soon enough. Now, you can use Quicken. Quicken's free. It's okay. You can kind of jerry-rig it for a business. But it's really QuickBooks is built for business. Quicken is built for personal. So get engaged in a QuickBooks bookkeeping system. For all of you solopreneurs out there, I just had a conversation with a client this morning where she asked, do I need to go get QuickBooks? I said, you're just getting started, but have a system. Use Excel. Use a spreadsheet. Use a wood tablet with a chisel. Use something. Have a system. Get a separate checkbook and track your income and your expenses as best you can. Try to use a separate credit card for your business. Now, again, when you set up a formal company like a corporation, you're going to have a separate tax return and a separate checkbook, and it's going to force you to do some of those things. But when you're a solopreneur, create separation. If there's anything I can say, I would say create separation between your personal checking and your business. Keep them separate. And on that final note is keep your receipts as best you can, even as a solopreneur. Have a little folder, a little box, a little somewhere. Keep your receipts. I don't need to see them as your accountant, but they are audit protection. If you ever get audited with the IRS, I want you to have that bucket, that drawer of receipts. I want a list of all your expenses. Again, I don't care if it's on QuickBooks. I want you to graduate to it as soon as you can, but have some system to track those expenses. Okay, so that's number 6 and 7. 6 and 7, kind of tax and legal, and then number 7, bookkeeping. All right, now I'm going to go to number 8. This is, folks, I'm feeling it, loving it. I hope I'm impacting your life here, because I feel as a solopreneur, these are huge topics that we need to be thinking about. And let me jump over to the chat window, see if there's some comments here before I get into 8, 9, and 10. So let's see here. Chat window, folks, no major comments there. And I'll check my email to see if any email questions came in. Nope, we're good. Just a quiet group today. That's all right. I'm not offended. I'll just cry myself to sleep tonight. But other than that, I'm good. Okay. Now, so on this number 8, folks, here's one of the problems that solopreneurs face. They cut corners with education. They feel oftentimes uneducated as an entrepreneur, but they don't know where to go to get education, or they're not willing to invest in it. And I don't care if you're doing an internet-based business, an MLM-based business, a real estate-based business, whatever it is, get support and spend some money for that training. You don't learn how to be an entrepreneur in college, do you? Our parents don't generally teach us how to be entrepreneurs. So when you want to become an entrepreneur, you just kind of go out and screw up until you figure it out, right? It's not fun. I've been there. I've done that. I've made way too many mistakes that cost me. I think of mistakes as expenses. That's kind of funny. Yeah, I've made too many mistakes that were a big expense. Just out there with the school of hard knocks. It's tough. It's really, really tough out there trying to make, and I think here it's important to get education. Now, Kirby makes a comment here. He's awesome. He says, I come here to get educated on select topics. Kirby, you're awesome. Thanks for making that comment in the chat window. I hope I'm a resource, again, with tax and legal, and I try to bring different topics up on my show and with the book, and I've got my CFO videos. Folks, if you don't have that support, those CFO videos are fantastic, my webinars every month, but I'm here for you, and it's affordable. Check it out. Use it. And no matter what type of business you have, find where you can get the best education on that topic and soak it up. Because, man, think about how much time we spend in a traditional collegiate academic world, and then when it's an entrepreneur, we just don't invest in that. We just don't have it. Anyway, okay. Now, there was a comment here from Jerem. Sorry, he just typed it up here. He said, hey, Mark, are there tax and legal benefits to building a board of advisors? Well, first of all, if your board of advisors are friends that you love hanging out with, when you do your barbecue every month, it's a tax write-off. When you take them out to dinner, it's a tax write-off. Maybe there's a little entertainment involved. You go to a baseball game or whatever. So if these are people you normally associate with for fun, the time you spend with them will be a tax write-off. So there you go. Jerem also asked, is there a certain amount of revenue you're making that makes an S-corporation more makes sense for a solopreneur? So when do you make the jump to being an S-corporation? Jerem, the answer to that is about it's going to vary from state to state, but it's going to be around $30,000 to $40,000 net. So when you're taking home from your business after expenses about $3,000 a month, call your mom, call your grandma, call your lover, then call me. Let me know. Let me know, Mark. I'm doing it. Woo! I'm making $3,000 a month. Great. Call me. Let's get you into an S-Corp right away. Now, the problem is you can't call me after the fact and go, hey, I did it. I can't backdate your S-Corporation. So look in that crystal ball and let me know as soon as you can that you're making that sort of income. And very, very important. Okay, now, that was number 8, continue your education. Number 9, I was really excited to share this one with you. Number 9 is outsource. For a solopreneur, this is one of the best strategies I can encourage you to do, is to find those websites that allow you to delegate and outsource very affordably. Now, one of the ones I love is Elance. If any of you haven't been to elance.com, it's been around a long time. Millions of people have been using it. It's a website where you can just throw out what you need, and people will bid on it from around the world. And it's kind of like an eBay portal for services. I love it. It's called Elance. Also, I kind of joke around this one sometimes with clients, and I've used it myself. It's Fiverr. I don't know if any of you have used Fiverr.com, F-I-V-E-R. And people bid on there to do anything for $5. And I've even gotten some logo design ideas for $5. Just go there and, oh, I need a logo with this image or this name. And you just throw it out there, and someone will give you 3 logo designs for $5. And it's kind of funny. So Fiverr, Elance, they're very, very helpful for entrepreneurs that are on a tight budget to get to outsource. Now, here's why I say this. As an entrepreneur, okay, listen, this is important. It's the 80-20 rule. 20% of the time you spend makes you 80% of your profit. Think about it. Are you as effective with your time as you could be? Are you out making copies at Staples when you could be talking to a client or a networking with a JV partner? What are you doing that's not productive, that doesn't directly result in making money? Try to outsource those things. Use family. Use kids. Use brothers, sisters, spouses. Use someone. Outsource it on the web. 20% of your time is used making 80% of your revenue. So focus. Focus on what makes your business most successful and spend your time doing that. Don't get sucked off doing menial tasks that you could otherwise delegate. And drum roll, please. We've got number 10. Now, this may seem as kind of a weird one for some of you, but is, and by the way, Jerem just made a comment. It's Fiverr with 2 R's. So it's 5RR. So F-I-V-E-R-R, Fiverr.com. And also I wanted to say, number 10, and I want to get to a couple quick questions, so I'm going to talk fast, is number 10. And guys, when you experience this, it's a revelation. To quote Benjamin Franklin, a penny saved is a penny earned. And as an entrepreneur, that's a big lesson learned. And it took me years to learn that. When you're an entrepreneur, you sometimes forget that everything you're spending on to get your business off the ground would otherwise be profit if you could figure out how not to spend it. And I know that sounds weird, but you figure that out as an entrepreneur, and all of a sudden you're like, oh, yeah, oh, saving money makes more profit. Focus on that. Be frugal. Be careful with your money. All right. Now, there's a couple other questions here. I want to check these out. This came in via email. Christina, good to hear from you. See your name. She said, what about the new law coming affecting all online business, collecting taxes for each state? We have to modify our payment processing systems and segregate accounts to state income, tax monthly, changes to our infrastructure and software. Christina, big topic. I'm going to hit this on a radio show. This is the sales tax topic. Now, remember, if you're doing services, it's not going to affect you. But if you're selling a product online to multiple people in multiple states, you're going to have to start collecting sales tax at some point. We knew this was coming. All the big retailers are having to do it. But I've written blog articles on this. But, Christina, I will have a radio show on the sales tax law, or at least part of a radio show on this. So I'm glad you reminded me. If you don't see that show soon, bug me. Okay. Now, Sanand, I'm going to see if I can hold this up. But he said, I may have a similar question. I have a Nevada ABC LLC, bought a note secured by a property in California. You know what, Sanand, I'm going to email you an answer to your question. And Marcy, I just saw your question as well. I will email you a response. Loving hearing from you guys. And I'm grateful that some of you took the time there to send me a quick question. I'll get to you via email. But let me throw this out for everybody out there. Being an entrepreneur is work. I love it. I'm passionate about it. I'm here for you. People that can show up, do my best to change your life. The American Dream is real. I'll be here next Tuesday at 11 a.m.
Thanks for listening to another hour of refreshing strategies to better live your American dream.
Don't forget to get your free copy of Mark and Matt's ebooks and sign up for their weekly free newsletter with important tax deadlines and articles at refreshyourwealth.com.